south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, what should we discuss today? How about we get really deep into un-PC territory? See how many wokesters we can piss off. I see that Biden, the people's choice, I mean, you voted for the guy, continues to make a fool out of himself. As Mark Twain once said, you get the politicians you deserve. Anyway, he announced on Tuesday vaccine mandates to apply to about 100 million Americans. That means most federal workers and contractors must get vaccinated, and a new Labor Department rule will be requiring companies and organizations with 100 workers or more to either impose vaccine mandates or subject non-vaxxers to weekly testing, which I understand will be at your expense. You think your employer's going to want to pick that up? At what is it now for the antigen test, around 30 bucks a crack? Man, am I glad I live in Latin America. And you know, this might sound crass, but I have less and less sympathy for all you guys and gals out there writing me emails saying, Johnny, it's basically unlivable here in the States, Canada, and Europe. And I'm thinking, oh yeah? And you didn't see any of this coming? Of course you did, and you're sat on your hands. Not just in the last year and a half with this COVIDia thing. I'm talking about 10 years ago. Though it's not too late to get your plan B going, it's getting harder and harder all the time. Meanwhile, as Biden tries to force everyone in the U.S. to get vaxxed, it's not a requirement for migrants, illegal or not, coming through the southern border. And they're flooding in like never before. Did you know with the last stats available, that'd be July 2021, more than 212,000 people snuck into the states illegally, almost none of them vaxxed. And that's 212,000 that got caught. And as stats go, the border control people say they only catch about 1 in 10. By the way, the stats for May and June 2021 show that 180,000 people were apprehended in each of those 2 months. Almost none of them vaxxed. And of course, unaccompanied children and most families are allowed to stay in the U.S. Did you know that? Go ahead, look it up. Yet there's no requirement for them to get vaxxed. Now, you know my position on getting vaxxed. Go ahead, do it if you want. You have to have freedom of choice about that kind of stuff. But mark my words, and I'm sure you all know this. If you get vaxxed, you are the guinea pig, because they skip that all-important animal testing phase that takes from 3 to 5 years. So you guys who took the vax, are that animal testing phase. I know, I'm preaching to the choir. But I do get lots of emails from people, especially emails from people in the military and other government employees and healthcare workers who've been forced to get vaxxed or lose their jobs, which has to be unconstitutional. But the maggots in Congress and the wokesters tore up the Constitution a long time ago. Oh, and this too from White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. She says that if in companies with over 100 workers, if they fail to have their workers vaxxed or tested weekly, there'll be a tattletale 800 hotline snitches can call, and then the business will incur fines of up to $13,000 per violation, which she says should motivate businesses towards the more cost-effective option of requiring everyone in the company to be vaccinated instead of weeding out and monitoring the non-vaxxers who'll have to be tested weekly. Yep, that's your government working for you. Uncle Joe would be proud. No, not Biden. Stalin. Once again, it's worth repeating what Mark Twain said, you get the government you deserve. Can't argue with that because you voted for him. And for those of you who voted for someone else, you're still responsible. Why? Because when you vote, that means you're under the delusion that the system actually works. And I think most people with a brain now are figuring out that's fantasy, strictly an illusion, just a show. Oh, and just one more thing about the COVID thing and the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. The simple question is, who's telling the truth about the science? In science, there's only one truth. The meta-analysis of the lab and test results. At least that's what you think or hope. But the fact is, scientists are not completely objective. Not the ones getting government money and outside grants, anyway. They're biased because they don't want to lose their jobs. They want to eat. That's why I think there's only one way to weed out the biased yes-men doctors and science flunkies. Here's how it should be done. Every time you see a so-called expert talking head on TV or doing a blog or a YouTube, before the researcher, doctor, guy, or gal, whoever, opens his mouth, the very first question for the interviewer should be, all right, doc, now tell us exactly who funds your research. Which organizations, private companies, or government fund your lab, your clinic, or your research? Where do you get your grants from? In other words, who pays your bills? Then you'll know exactly where their biases are. And for example, if they got grants or had research funded by Johnson & Johnson or Pfizer, etc., or by the big purse strings of Dr. Fauci through FDA or WHO grants, you say, thanks, but no thanks. The interview's over. Because everyone in the grant-writing business knows if your results don't look good to the company that funded your grant, they'll either shit-can the study. The dirty little secret is researchers know before they even start the study what kind of results the grant giver is looking for. And don't forget to do these research projects involves many people, many employees, lots of technology, big payrolls. You got to get big grants, and big money grants come from deep pockets like Big Pharma, meaning you got to play nice with the people handing out the money to keep the dough flowing. Can't you see there's something terribly wrong with that system? And remember, even these big research labs at universities are funded by Big Pharma. So don't be fooled when you see a big study coming out of a prestige university like Johns Hopkins or Mayo Clinic. When people see results from places like that, they're impressed. They think it's gospel. Think again. You've got to follow the money. See where the research grants came from. And if you think it ain't about the money, a Wall Street Journal article pointed out today that Moderna stock, as well as shares of COVID vaccine makers BioNTech and Novavax, were tanking after an article in the British medical journal Lancet said a booster shot would not be necessary for most people. So with that news seemingly poo-pooing a third vaccine dose, Moderna's and other vax stocks tanked. So if you think it's not about the money, why did their stocks take a dive? Well, it ain't because they want to save humanity. Please, don't make me laugh. By the way, you know, I've even heard my family and friends up in the States say, Johnny, my doctor says I absolutely should get the vax. He's the doc. He's the professional. And you know more than he does? Well, you think that's enough to shut me up? Well, here's what I say. And you can look this up. Over 50% of MDs in the United States, when their patients tell them they take vitamins, half of all docs will say, if you have a good diet, you don't need vitamins. It's just expensive urine. Meanwhile, they're finding in every single COVIDiot case that ends up in the hospital, the afflicted are chronically low on vitamin D and zinc, just for starters. Are you getting this? The fact that half of the doctors in the United States either can't make the time between golf games to keep up with the literature or are just clueless. In fact, one particular bad MD I know up in Chicago, when I asked him if he keeps up on all the literature, he said, not necessary. The drug reps keep me posted. I thought, what? Yep, Dr. H, you're part of the problem and you know who you are. One of those get vaxxed and vitamins and minerals are just expensive urine kind of doc. I rest my case. But back to living in Latin America. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. All right, so how about a little of the ugly now? Listen to this from Ecuador's biggest newspaper. The headline, anger and confusion mount over Ecuadorian government's decision to accept 5,000 Afghan refugees from the U.S.'s failed Afghan war. And I'll paraphrase this and cut out the boring parts as usual. It says, Ecuador's Human Rights Secretariat is developing plans to accommodate 5,000 Afghan refugees, but is not prepared to release the details until it receives guidance from the USA. Ecuador, shame on you, kissing up to the U.S. again. Anyway, the article continues. The question is, as former Interior Minister Carlos Davalos says, when do they arrive and where will they stay? Will they be housed in Quito, Cuenca, or Guayaquil? And will they be integrated into the general population or have their own compound? He says, how can we accept them when the country is already overwhelmed with refugees, many of them from Venezuela and Haiti? And the Haitians are a very big problem. The majority of them broke and don't know the Spanish language. Not even high school educated, begging on the streets. All right, me, Johnny, breaking in here now for a second. You know, Haiti is considered a Latin American country, except their main languages are a kind of Creole that's a mix of Spanish and French. Of course, you know, Haiti was originally a French slave colony. Yeah, that's right. The French had a number of slave colonies in the Caribbean. Wait a minute, Johnny. That can't be right. So say the wokesters. The U.S. were the world's slave masters. Wrong. If you know your history, and most people don't, something like 80% of all New World slaves were shipped not to America, but Brazil by the Portuguese, Brazil being a Portuguese colony. Wait just a minute. But Johnny, you must be wrong. Again, say the wokesters. The U.S. were the world's slave masters. Everybody knows that. Wrong again. Read a history book, you dumbasses. Oh, and if you read a little history, you'll find out slavery was legal and a huge part of the economy in the Islamic and Muslim Empire, and still going on in a big way in Muslim countries today. Oh, but let's not talk about that. It's their culture, and it's complicated. Oh, by the way, did you know that Saudi Arabia abolished slavery in 1962? No, not 1862, 1962. Only about 100 years after the U.S. abolished it. Oh, and it still goes on in Saudi Arabia and most Muslim countries unofficially today. In fact, journalists have written hundreds of stories in recent years, having gone undercover and followed the slave trade. Though the wokesters and the BLM people don't seem to give a rat's ass about that. But I digress as usual. Let's get back to the case of Ecuador absorbing 5,000 Afghan refugees. The former interior minister, Davalos, goes on to say, "Who will pay for the care of the refugees? Is the U.S. pledging money to handle the relocation?" He says, "This has all the earmarks of a Trojan horse, and many of us know how these things work. We're told this is a temporary situation, but what does that really mean? Do these families eventually get shipped back to the U.S. in 6 months, a year, or never?" And then he says, "How do we know if it's only going to be 5,000? There's so much anger in the U.S. about refugees, and what if Washington decides to offload another 5 or 10,000 or more? Do we accept, or are we in a position to refuse it?" And then we've got a guy named Mauricio Gandera, who was for many years Ecuador's ambassador to a number of Middle Eastern countries. He says, "It's not a good idea to host Afghans. They'll face major cultural barriers. Different religion, different language. Besides that," he says, "they're under extreme emotional turmoil and stress. Is Ecuador prepared to deal with these challenges? I think not." And then he says, get this, "There is the issue of potential retribution from the new Taliban government in Afghanistan. Can we expect that new government will target some of the refugees who had close ties with the U.S. and come to Ecuador and get their revenge?" He says, "We've seen this happen before with China and Belarus. Is Ecuador responsible for providing protection for thousands of Afghans?" Why, he says, is Ecuador reducing its options by doing the bidding of the U.S.? Think of the cultural clashes. Islamic women in Afghanistan are not allowed to study or work. They're forbidden to travel alone and drive. He says, "I hope the government knows the risks associated with accepting Afghan refugees who will most likely never integrate into Latin American society." The other thing is that most Afghan refugees are not in love with Western society. They don't really agree with it at all. The only reason they were in a rush and a panic to get out in a hurry, because the Taliban had them on a list. They were marked men and women. The only crime, most all of them, was the fact that they worked with the U.S. and U.N. occupying forces as contractors, helpers, or aides. The fact is, for every U.S. person on the ground in Afghanistan, there is at least one civilian contractor. The local Afghans were contracted as road and infrastructure workers and translators, drivers, plumbers, roofers, mechanics, electricians, cement workers. They weren't traitors to their country or their cause. They were just looking to make a living and survive the conditions of war. Most all of them still devout Muslims who totally believe in the Quran, a book that is firmly opposed to what they call degenerate Western culture. A book, by the way, that designates women as second and third class citizens. And if you doubt that, just look up the passage in the Quran that says that a Muslim man's testimony in court is equal to the testimony of two women. And that's just one of the hundreds of examples of inequality written by the Prophet Muhammad in the 8th century. But you knew that already, right? Now, as far as the U.S. shipping refugee Afghans to its friendly nations like Ecuador, it's true, 5,000 doesn't sound like much, especially since there's an estimated 5 million or so Muslims living in Latin America. And 5 million, constituting slightly less than 1% of the entire population of Latin America, which is around 600 million total. But here's the facts that should be of interest to us expats. Of those 5 million Muslims, 2/3 of them, that's 2 out of 3, live in Argentina and Brazil. By the way, when you're down here in Latin America, oftentimes you'll hear the locals referred to Muslims as Turcos. Translation, Turks. Of course, they're not all Turks, but somehow they got that moniker. Just like Latin Americans lump in all Asians, too. That means Japanese, Chinese, South Koreans, Indonesians, Filipinos. Latinos refer to the whole group of them as Chinos. Translation, Chinamen. Not correctly as Asians. Nope, they're just all lumped in as Chinos. Now, of course, up in the States, that'd be practically a hanging offense if you tried to pull that off. You'd be immediately canceled and attacked. The Twitter mob and the woke crazies would have your balls for breakfast. You'd be canceled and might just lose your job. But back to Muslims in Latin America. Turns out established Muslim families in Latin America do very well in business and professionally. In fact, many second and third generation Muslims rise to the top in nearly all professions. Though I personally think, and I've been down here a long time, so I do have my reservations, that Muslims, when they rise to the top in politics, can be a dangerous thing. Hey, look at the Muslim contingent in Congress in the United States. You feel good about that? Well, maybe you do. You're still up there playing musical chairs on the Titanic. Nevertheless, down here in Latin America, compared to the average Latino, Muslims are very politically and economically successful. In fact, 8 recent Latin American heads of state have full or part Muslim heritage. The president of El Salvador, 2 former presidents from Ecuador, a former president from Honduras, Carlos Menem, who was president for 10 years in Argentina, former presidents from the Dominican Republic and Colombia. Then, of course, you've got the richest guy in all of Latin America, fat boy Carlos Slim, who owns the giant telecommunications firm Claro, amongst other things. Now, as far as radical Islamic cells here in Latin America, it's understood and well known by intelligent Latin Americans, people in the know, that the majority of Islamic radicals have a pipeline through Venezuela. Being that Venezuela's been blacklisted for years by the international community and their oil revenues are way down, they've been making up for the cash crunch in small ways by selling passports to Muslim activists to the tune of $20,000 to $50,000 a crack. In fact, over 2,000 Muslim radicals have been vetted out worldwide with Venezuelan passports. In other words, they're 100% Venezuelan citizens. Which is funny because none of them spoke a lick of Spanish. How'd that happen? Oh, and if you know any Venezuelans, do you know any? Just ask them if they know of any Muslim or Islamic cells in their country. Well, they might say no, but they will tell you there are some villages and towns that are 100% Muslim and some that appear off limits to regular Latino Venezuelans. I've heard that same story from a number of Venezuelans I know. In fact, one guy from Caracas told me that there's a place called the Center for Iranian Latin American Cultural Exchange in Caracas that he says is well known to be a base for Islamic radicals. And one Venezuelan guy I know who escaped, he used to work for a bank there in Caracas. He told me it was well known in his department in the bank that they were laundering money for Iranians. But since Chavez and Iran were buddies, they'd signed some oil deals. It remained gossip and shop talk. It was never talked about on the record or beyond closed doors. All right, on a lighter note, speaking of positive role models, have you heard of this famous Latino rapper? His name is Dan Suhr. Apparently, he's got 2 million followers on TikTok. And you know, since 15 minutes of fame fades fast, especially if you got no talent. By the way, that Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame thing is pretty accurate. But if you're infamous, it lasts a bit longer. Like this idiot no-talent rapper Dan Suhr, whose first 15 minutes ran out. Now he's in the running again for this special look he's been sporting since April, which involves having gold chains implanted directly into his skull. Yep, you heard right. Apparently, he's got titanium hooks implanted in his skull. And the little hooks protrude through the skin, allowing him to attach gold chains that make it look like he's got real 18-karat gold hair. Now, whether this is totally true or not, it produced the desired effect. He got a second round of fame, another 15 minutes. What a role model, huh? Well, we know what's outside of his head. But what's exactly in his head? Well, I guess you could say he's the poster boy for the phrase, shit for brains. And to think, back when I was a kid, parents thought the Beatles were fostering delinquency. They were unacceptable role models because their hair covered their ears. All right, speaking of sex, love, dating, and mating here in Latin America, people always want to know whether he or she loves you, yeah, or not. So now comes this rather geeky, though interesting but slightly technical email concerning jealousy in general and jealousy in Latin America from a guy who calls himself the armchair psychiatrist. He writes, "Dear Johnny, about Latin American excessive jealousy you talk about, and that I've seen in fact for myself, I have a Puerto Rican wife. Well, I'm here to tell you, Johnny, there's very well-based scientific evidence that reveals in some cultures, jealousy is a component of love." He says the emotion of jealousy motivates multiple actions in response to a threat to the relationship. Sexual jealousy, for example, may produce either one of two radically different tactics, vigilance or violence. In the case of women, they'll skew towards vigilance, and men often towards violence. For example, a jealous guy might secretly follow his lover to see where she's going or where she said she'd be. He might call her unexpectedly to see where she is, keep an eye out at a party or get-together when she's off to the ladies' room, or even stoop to cloning her phone and reading her text messages or emails. However, if it progresses beyond vigilance, it may turn to violence. A man might threaten the rival if he's flirting. maybe attack the rival with his fists, get his friends to beat up the rival, scratch the guy's car, flatten his tires, or throw a brick through the rival's window. Both vigilance and violence are mate retention tactics, Johnny. How effective they are is another matter, often depending on the culture. They're both the same psychological adaptations of jealousy. And jealousy between cultures is not a rigid, invariant instinct, but highly sensitive to context and environment, including the status and mate value of the rival. Then he offers this example from nature. He says, for example, it's almost always the case that a man has to offer more than good sex to a long-term partner. The same with many other animals in nature. As in the case of an insect called the scorpion fly, a female will refuse to copulate with a male unless he brings her a substantial gift, typically a dead insect to be eaten. While the female is eating this gift, the male copulates with her. During copulation, the male maintains a loose grasp on the food to prevent the female from absconding with it before he completely does his thing. Because, you see, for the scorpion fly, it takes the male 20 minutes of continuous copulation to deposit all of his sperm into the female. The male scorpion flies have evolved the ability to select a gift that takes the female approximately 20 minutes to consume. And when he's done, the two of them fight over the leftovers, if any. So conflicts and fights between the male and female only occur if the gift he gave is too small or too large. It's easy to extrapolate many animal behaviors to humans. For example, numerous psychology studies have shown the importance or unimportance of certain characteristics in potential mate or marriage partner selection. In fact, there have been many studies that rate the importance of 18 different characteristics that are actively or subconsciously weighed in determining an adequate mate. For example, it turns out women across all continents, all economic systems, including socialism and communism, all ethnic groups, all religious groups, and all systems of mating, they roughly value the financial resources of a male about 100% more than men value the financial resources of a woman. The fact that women rate men's financial resources at the top of the mating priority list is a well-established fact, and one of the most robustly documented gender differences in the entire field of psychology. So, Johnny, when you mentioned the fact in past shows that Latin American women prefer first world men, that may well be true. However, it's not so much to do with our looks, charm, or wit. It seems to me, and the studies prove it too, that third world ladies prefer first world men for their economic resources above all else. So although being blonde, blue-eyed, and tall might have its advantages, I hate to rain on your parade, but I'm sorry, Johnny. Studies indicate that the gringo advantage of yours in the romance department, anyway, is all about the money. So until it can be proven otherwise, I suggest you don't delude yourself. Signed, Stiggy Freud, the armchair psychiatrist. Stiggy Freud, I like it. Well, Stiggy, a lot of good points there. One thing I think we all overlook is the fact that many gringos and gringas come down to Latin America technically broke. They're in no way financially set or secure. They're just coming down for boots on the ground or vacation. The thing is, though, Latinos and Latinas think by virtue of the fact we can go on a vacation 4,000 miles from home that somehow we must have money. How could it be otherwise? They could never do that. Well, what Latinos and Latinas fail to realize is that most people in the first world have no money but great credit. We can do what they can never do. We can put an entire international trip on a charge card. We don't have to come up with the cash. If we did, that would just kill international tourism, wouldn't it? Meanwhile, only about 5% of Latin Americans have a credit card with a high limit that is $2,000 or more. You see, most all Latinos and Latinas have debit cards. Very few have credit cards, and the ones that do have, at most, a $500 limit. And that'll barely cover airfare if you're taking a long-distance trip. All right, changing gears here. Here's my opinion about something that's been bothering me. If politicians love the vaccine so much, I think every politician should get double and triple dose, don't you? Oh, and that goes double for those highly educated TSA and immigration officers, too. Hey, that should produce the desired effect. It'll thin their ranks in a hurry. And how about this for a bonus? As some of the big fish bite the dust, I'll be glad to DJ at their funerals. Just send me an email, theexpertfiles@gmail.com, and tell me when and where. By the way, lately I've been talking to a few Latin American doctors. They tell me everyone seems to be getting on the ivermectin bandwagon down here. Oh, and talk about fake news. When someone says ivermectin's a veterinary medicine, a horse dewormer, yep, it's that. But did you know that almost every single human antibiotic is used in veterinary medicine too? Yep, ampicillin, amoxicillin, tetracycline, cephalosporins, the works. Every antibiotic prescribed for humans is prescribed for pets, too. That's why it really irks me when I see the lamestream journalists calling out ivermectin as a horse dewormer. When, in fact, the guy who invented it got the Nobel Prize not for its use in veterinary medicine, but for its use in humans, with over 30 million doses prescribed to humans. 30 million, just in the past 10 or so years. Man, you know, Big Pharma, Lame Street Media, and every last a-hole bureaucrat in government are just despicable liars. Oh, and I forgot, big malignant tech like YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and the rest of them. Come on, horse dewormer, please. When I hear people say that, I know they've got shit for brains. And they've never bothered to look up or investigate anything beyond what they hear from the maggotest lamestream talking heads. But then again, you know, every other person that passes you on the street is below average. That's a statistical certainty. Meanwhile, America's colleges and universities are dropping entrance exams. Why? Because they're racist, of course. And there's pressure to drop the age-old exam process completely. You know what that does, don't you? It dumbs down every profession. Pass or fail? I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it. I'll tell you what, I don't care if the pilot of my airplane or the doctor doing my brain surgery is a flat-out Nazi bigoted racist or totally woke. I just want the most qualified guy on the job. That's all. I don't care what his opinions or his politics are. But you gotta qualify people. I mean, really. 100 guys in a law school class or a medical school class, there's gonna be a guy who's ranked number one and a guy at the bottom ranked 100. Wouldn't it be nice to know that before the doc does a root canal or drills a hole in your head? If you want the best, you have to have meritocracy in the professions. But sadly, with no entrance exam requirements and going to a pass-fail system, I'm sorry, I'd much rather be here in Latin America where traditional meritocratic systems of grading prevail than they will for a long, long time. Thank God for Latin American lag time, huh? It's a shame. Up by you in the States, the future of the professions is looking pretty dim. Man, am I glad I live in Latin America. Where they don't even know, by the way, that there is an alternative second meaning to the word woke. Latinos still think it just means rise and shine. And that prefabricated word Latinx, you know, Latin with an X after it. Latinos down here either say it's completely confusing or the most inutil or useless thing they've ever heard. Meanwhile, the other day I got some spam from the Los Angeles Times newspaper announcing they've got a whole new special edition to the paper. Stories written, edited, and laid out by Latino journalists and editors who are U.S. citizens or living in the States. Of course, it's called the Los Angeles Times Latinx section. Need I say more?
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.